Well, somehow I think someone's not getting a redemption arc this season.
Oh, most definitely not.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back, and we are coming back with Ruby. Attack on Titan's going into the corner for a little bit, but we will get back to that one next week. But for the moment, we got Ruby, and oh boy. Oh, Ironwoods.
I mean, okay, so we're covering episodes 10 and 11. So, and I'll say this right now, and I think James will agree with me. Episode 10, probably the best episode of Volume 8, I'm not going to lie.
Easily the best episode of Volume 8, and I'd actually say one of my favourite episodes in the show, period. Like, especially visually.
Yeah, I probably agree with you there. Because the episode begins with, like, Ironwood getting real mad because... Tyrion, he's somewhere else.
Yeah, well, he's way out.
Like, you know, Cinder broke Watts out of prison, and because of that, Crow and Robin were able to escape. And these two poor guards are like, listen, Crow and Robin got away. We've still got Jacques Schnee, and he's like, oh yeah, like that matters. Oh,
like,
well done,
we've
still got Jacques Schnee. He was such a major threat to my operation.
It's the fact that you don't even, like, you hear them vaguely talking. It's just the ringing in the ears. Like, James is fully losing the plot at this point.
Absolutely. If he hasn't already. And, like, and no, again, this isn't a criticism of the writing, but, like, the fact that Ironwood, like, he even says, like, send everyone to apprehend Crow and Robin. And I'm like, really, dude? Those two are, like, a threat. They're a priority to you, are they? Not... points out window at the giant grim whale. That!
that'd be solved eventually. I don't know, James!
Well, that's the funny thing, is that, like, I suppose you make the argument that, like, he knows Crow and Robin would probably come for him, like, and that's why he's like, oh, make sure you apprehend them. But it's almost like, I feel like your priorities are very skewed, Ironwood. But yeah, and then you get this amazing bit, because he just looks back out the window, and he's like, so what's the stat? And then... this
boom,
magnificent golden explosion erupts from the whale. And that, I found that, I was legit taken aback. I was almost thrown out of my seat. I'm like, whoa, what?
Yeah, because it literally just comes out of nowhere as kind of like what an explosion would do. Just like this massive explosion, this huge shot of light coming out of it. And just, it then just cuts to seeing all of our characters reacting to this massive explosion.
Yeah, honestly, us like trying to describe it doesn't do it justice, because it does legit look incredible. And I think I will agree with you, James, because I remember you said before we were recording that it's one of the most visually stunning moments in the whole series. And it's hilarious because, you know, at the end of the last episode with Oscar / Osbin obviously doing that final flash, I guess you could call it, on Salem and Hazel. And I was sort of thinking, okay, I didn't realise it was going to do that.
Just... leaving this massive explosion, pretty much like destroying most of Monstro. Just this huge explosion.
So yeah, Hazel's dead. Like, he most dead.
Without a doubt.
I mean, to be fair, I was like, oh, he's definitely dead. There's no way he survived that. And then I was like, but we don't see a body. And then and here's the thing, though. I'm watching this bit just like a guard, like in too much shock, in shocked silence. And then you just see Neo dancing through the destruction and the rubble. And I'm like... this is why she's my favourite character. God, I love her so much.
Holding onto the lamp as well. It's like, oh,
just,
here we go.
Just skipping away, like, nothing to do with me. Bye.
Bye, guys. Again, going back to the visuals, just seeing, like, the after effect of this explosion, just seeing, like, the dust cloud, like, getting in the way of the lights. Like, whoever was doing the art for this episode, like, A+, like, gorgeous-looking episode.
I also really like that the whale, like, isn't just eviscerated. Like, it's still, its body's still there, but, like, it's, like, middle's just got, you see, like, a rib cage as well.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a head, bones, and a tail.
Which leads me to have a horrible realisation. Maybe it's not completely dead.
Yeah, but, well, to be fair, with its entire body missing, what's it gonna do?
Regrow? just see a tiny head start coming out of the rib cage.
It's just there flopping on the ground, just like, I'll get you.
We were intimidated by this.
It's like, can you just like walk into my mouth? Are you going to eat me? No.
No. Just push it off the side.
Oh, yeah, no. they just shove it off the edge. It's like.
No, because it just be the little head come out, just go, meow!
Yeah. Anyway, Marrow's sad because he thinks all the kids are in there, which I like. I'll get into Marrow later. Don't you worry.
Oh yes, especially with the next episode. But it's just a reaction to all the Aesops, just like, oh god, what the hell happened? We didn't do that.
Yeah, it's like, did you do that? We didn't do that.
And then James radios on like the Emperor, going, "Good, good work."
Yeah, I love that. He's all like, good job, guys." And they're like, yes." No, they don't do that. But yeah, they all just immediately like leave and
wondering what the hell's going on. Well, they got the bomb.
Yeah, I was like, "Hang on a second. So they didn't use the bomb. They've still got the bomb. There's no way they're not going to use that bomb. There's no way the writer's just going to go, and the bomb did nothing else." I'm like, no, you're saving that for something else, I bet. And oh boy, were they.
They weren't wrong. And it definitely will come into play later.
And then we get into possibly the best scene of the episodes.
Without a doubt, the best scene, hands down.
Which is where we find out what Watts' semblance is, dropping truth bombs.
No, I think my favourite one I've heard is savagery. Because boy, was he savage.
Yeah, because Cinder and Watts are just on top of a building looking at like the destruction. And Watts is like, well, Salem will come back, but like, have we heard from anybody else? And Cinder's like, I don't give a shit, I want the maiden powers. And actually, we do also learn, because Watts explains how the virus works, as it turns out he doesn't have direct control. The virus itself is just like trying to put Penny on a path to the vault so that she'll then blow up.
Yeah, it also shows up, like, it's a good way of showing that the limitations, that Watts isn't so good with technology that he's like able to go, oh yeah, I just hacked and make it do what I want. It's like there is limitations to it, which I like.
Yeah, I like that it's now been explained. But of course, Cinder's all like, wait, she's going to blow herself up? Like, then I won't be able to get the power. And so she
need it!
Yeah, she grabs Watts by the throat and suspends him over the top of the skyscraper they're on, or the whatever building they're on. And I'm like, oh my god, is Cinder actually just going to murder Watts?
It's just the fact that she's holding it and she's like, here's what's going to happen. You're going to tell me where they are. I'm going to drop you in and I'm going to go tear her apart. And it's like, oh, is it going to turn into Watts begging for his life and all this sort? Nope. Watts doesn't beg. He literally just starts laughing.
Yeah, it's great. Like, Cinder's being all, like, threatening and menacing, and Watts just laughs in her face and is basically like, you stupid bitch, you haven't got a single thing right. Like, you...
It's like, wait, I did!
That's Christopher Sabat just absolutely nailing the delivery for the entire scene, because he points out all of Cinder's like recent failures. The fact that she tried to fight Winter and Penny in volume 7 and lost, you know. She teamed up with Raven just so she could like get revenge on Ruby, and that completely backfired and she nearly died. And as you point out, the fact that Watts is there like, oh, if only somebody warned you that was a bad idea. Oh wait, it was me! Like, because I actually completely forgot, the last time these two saw each other was when Cinder took off to work with Raven at Haven Academy. So Watts has probably been stewing on that for a while. He's probably been thinking, oh, when I see her again, I am going to lay it into her.
I am rubbing this in her face.
And Watts basically like turns into a portion of the fan base where he's like, just because you suffered doesn't mean you're entitled to power. Like, you have to be smart, you have to work for it. And then my favourite line in that entire monologue is like, but all you are is a bloody migraine! And it's like, oh, you could tell he's been holding that in.
Yeah.
And shockingly, Cinder doesn't kill him.
Yeah, she pulls him back, like, she gives a scream, pulls him back, and just... it's not even like a storm off or anything. She actually like starts crying and walks away.
Just like
away.
Walks like... off, just sits on the edge of the building and just starts quietly crying to herself, because I think she knows he's right.
Yeah. It's like, he's telling the truth. You messed up.
Which is like, I actually was like, that was like just a really nice moment. The fact that it wasn't like again, it's not like overdone. Like, she just like quietly walks off, just sits, and you just see her crying. And I feel like it's a nice reminder that, like, again, Cinder is ultimately a victim in all of this.
Mm.
And, you know, I guess you could also make the argument that she's still probably that scared, abused child from all those years ago. She hasn't really properly matured.
Especially, like...
Again, does not excuse all the things she's done.
That's the thing, like, understanding what led them to become that doesn't mean you're forgiving them or like going, oh, it's totally fine what they've done. It's like, no, what they're doing is still horrible, but you understand why.
I actually wonder if maybe, like, in a weird way, Watts is like lashing out at her is actually going to make her reconsider like her entire motivation. I mean, she's still gonna be evil, but what if like she ends up actually taking his advice and starts planning and only becomes more dangerous?
That would actually be really good. I'd actually like that.
I'd really like to see that. And then she kills Watts.
I actually would like it if she doesn't. Like, she actually realizes, like, doesn't, don't get me wrong, doesn't like him or anything, but it's just like grudging, like, okay, you were right.
Yeah. Anyway, so after that amazing scene, we cut back to Yang's team, who are all like, oh my god, we lived. How did we survive that? Yeah, and then, like, you know, Blake phones her up and is like, oh my god, you're okay. And it's like, okay, it's good that they establish this now, like, the rest of Team Ruby for going, oh, they're okay. And then Yang's team take off with Emerald as a captive because they sure as shit don't trust her. It's like,
like, even Emerald's like, no, you're right, Blondie's right, so why do you... I should go and you should go on. It's like, nope. You're roped into this now, Emerald. You're now on the good guy team.
Yeah, and I this is a nice moment where, like, because as the team's taking Emerald with them, like, Yang and Jean are pissed at her. Like, Yang pointing out that Emerald's, like, even if she wasn't directly responsible, did play a part in the deaths that took place at Beacon, and is part of the reason why she lost an arm. And
why she lost an arm and Pyrrha's dead.
Yeah, but then also the fact that Ren and Oscar, however, are much more sympathetic to her. Oscar, because, you know, he was there with Emerald. And Ren, obviously, now that he can actually read people's emotions, like, recognises that Emerald is just as scared as the rest of them. So, and I like that. I like the idea of Ren becoming much more empathetic. I'll get into that more later.
Ah, with that scene...
And then Ren basically says, oh, by the way, Ozpin's back because I can read your emotions. And everyone's like, what? And he's like, yeah, okay. Also, like, the big magic beam was all the energy that Ozpin had been storing up in this cane.
There's like, a bit left, but we've got to be careful what we use it. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. It'll be at the end of the season.
Yeah, and Oscar basically saying, okay, look, Ozpin put his trust in me. I'm going to put his trust in him. We just need to hash out all these negative feelings between us. I know we left him in a bad place back in Volume 6, but, like, we can't drag this out forever. And I'm like, okay, that's good.
I do like it as well that, like, he's like, look, Ozpin, like, took the hits for me when I was being tortured. Like, let's hear him out at this point.
Yeah, I remember hearing that bit, and I'm like, but, I mean, you took the hits for him as well. Like, so, I mean, that was a bit of give and take, a bit of both.
Two souls, same body, I suppose.
Yeah, and then because where Yang's team is that they've actually ended up, because they're still in Atlas, so they've ended up where all the Atlas citizens are, like, hiding out in the subways, and it's a nice moment when they walk through seeing, like, just all these scared people, and Emerald sort of realizing, oh, I did this.
Like, oh, this is my fault.
Because don't forget, actually, like, even, you know, the seeds were sowing for Emerald's eventual betrayal back in Volume 3 when the attack on Beacon began. She was looking down at the carnage and going, this is so sad.
Yeah.
Like, she, and actually, I think in this instance, being at the ground level, actually seeing it, like, seeing the faces of these people, I think has played a bigger part in why she's eventually going to stick with the group.
At the very least, till the end of the season, and then maybe go, like, Lyria and be like, right, I'm going to do stuff off-screen for you.
I mean,
because too many characters.
I'm going to get into Emerald in a bit later, because I have opinions, okay? Anyway, after that, we cut back to Ironwood, like...
Oh, this bit.
Barely hanging by a thread. No, it's great. This is great, because he's like, well done, guys, we've done a decisive blow to Sailor today, and Winter's like... Yeah, that wasn't us. Like, we still have the bomb. Somebody else did that. And I was like, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. Like, the whale's dead, so...
It's the fact that he's like, but who could it be? It's like, I mean, you saw the explosion and the magic coming out of it. I think you can have a guess who it could be.
Also, this bit as well, the fact that Iron was like, okay, Penny still hasn't come back, which means Watts is either incompetent or betrayed us. And I'm like, no. You think Watts betrayed you? stupid man. Like,
oh, James, for such a smart man, you are incredibly stupid.
You know, the Tin Man, the Tin Man was lacking a heart, but he wasn't lacking brains, and you seem to lack both.
He also then reveals that Robin, thank you. Yeah. How the hell did I miss that? Crow and Robin have escaped, and Harriet's like looking daggers like, I want revenge.
Oh, Harriet. Oh.
Oh, I have things to say about her in a few moments.
Oh, do you? But yeah, anyway, I was just like banging on about how like, oh, you're like, we're going to get ourselves destroyed if we don't get the Winter Maiden. And then he's all like, and I can't believe I didn't like think of it first. Like,
yeah, he basically wants to get Yang and Lyren, and basically like, yeah, I'm gonna torture them.
well, he never says that, but he's basically like, oh, Winter, it's a good thing you captured Yang, Zhaun, and Ren, and it's like leveraging the lives of Penny's friends is the only way to get her to cooperate. It's the little chuckle and like the, I can't believe I didn't think of it earlier. Like the way he says it so flippantly, it's like, oh my god, you've straight up gone to like capturing children and using them as leverage. You are a sick man. And the look on Winter's face is so good. Like, it's at that point where she is realizing, oh my god, he's actually insane. Like,
and then, he's broken. He's snapped.
And then Harriet, like a narc, is all like, oh, Winter let them go. And I'm like, Harriet, you bitch.
Yeah, she literally just goes, oh yeah, she let them go. And it's the fact that he's holding onto Winter's shoulder and just the eyes where he goes, what?
Also, the fact that the fact that Winter doesn't even look at him in the face, like this, like Winter,
she's scared
looks
of him. Like, she's terrified.
And poor Winter, like, right?
She has never, like, she has always been on, like, on his side, on James's side. She's always been like defending him on by everything, and to see him go to this low a level, it's like, oh, it's breaking.
And from Ironwood's perspective, you know, he always felt that Winter was like the one person he could really count on. Like, she's been by his side through so long, and then to find out that even she's like going against his orders, he just snaps.
It's the fact he keeps calm at first. He goes, "Now we have nothing," and just smashes the table.
Yeah, I was about to say. He's like, and he snaps, and so does the table
into pieces.
Yeah,
it's going to pieces, just like James's mind.
Oh, I forget the name of his actor, but he definitely needs props, which is great, because I think I remember back in Volume 2 thinking he was kind of mediocre. He's definitely, between Volume 7 and this, or, well done,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, definitely done amazingly. Oh.
And then he gets a report about, like, sir, there's a bunch of ships coming into Mantle, and at first I was like, oh, Kira, Ilya, the crew, the gang, the squads, but no, it's the established plan when Winter, Whitley, oh, Jacques, why did you name all your kids with names beginning with W? It's a theme, it's what I do. It's what everyone in this show does. That's fair, yeah.
You win this round.
But anyway, it's all the ships that Whitley is sending to recover the people from Mantle, which is like, oh, that's nice.
It's actually paying off, or is it? Because he's like, oh yes, it's always been about Mantle. Starts laughing, turns around in a villain pose, and he's like, I need to make a call.
He's just such a supervillain now, and yeah. he's so like unaware of it. It's like, you are a lost cause, sir.
Yeah, there is, again, no redemption arc for you. You are
like, even when you shot that councilman for no reason, I was like, I mean, it's not impossible, but like, oh, and that's not even like the worst thing he does this episode.
Oh god, no.
Anyway, we then get my other favorite scene, which is like, it cuts back to Cinder and Watt, and then Cinder getting text from Neo, and it's like, and it's just the,
I forgot
it's the,
about this.
It's the, Neo's like, so she sends a message, and it's weird actually, because obviously she doesn't talk, so the only way, like, the way she texts is like another great insight into her personality, like the winky face at the end. Also her profile pic where it's like, clearly like, get that camera out of my face, which is like, clearly Cinder, look Neo, I'm adding you to my contacts, I need a profile pic, and Neo's like, get that shit out of my face. Anyway, sorry, I love Neo so much. And it's like, to send a message saying, your boss won't stay dead, but you will without this. And just sends a selfie of her with the lamp, and it's like, oh!
It's the fact that she's holding her face like, oh, how did I get this?
Oh, what's this here? And it's like, And it's like, if you want her name, you know what you owe me. And it's like, oh, here we go. Neo's just there like, look, I've waited long enough. Let me kill Ruby and I'll give you the lamp. I just want to kill Ruby.
I just want to kill Ruby. Is that too much to ask?
I just want to murder a young girl. I also actually forgot, like, oh wait, did I make this joke last? Oh yeah, I did make that joke last time, about, like, the fact that Neo can't even use the lamp, so.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I already made that joke. Anyway, and then we get, to be fair, this scene was actually really sweet, like, the two teams reuniting. It feels like forever since these two, like, split up.
Yeah, it's been going for a while.
It's really not, like, Ruby immediately runs to Yang, they hug, and, like, Ruby doesn't even say anything, but Yang's like, I missed you too. And considering, again, how they left off, this was actually really nice. So I was like, okay, their little tiff in the first episode did kind of go somewhere.
That's something I did like. I did like that we're not wallowing in this. Like, it is actually like this and the next episode. It's like, no, they're still very much.
A part of me kind of wishes that there was a bit more to, like, the Ruby Yang sort of antagonism. But at the same time, there would have been a risk of that, like,
getting in the way of what's happening. Like,
yeah, kind
guys,
of
now is
things.
Not the time.
It would. I feel like it could have been more fleshed out. As it is, it's fine. So, you know, I'm not going to complain too much. And here's the thing, though. Like, the team's all, like, hugging and all reuniting, and then, like, you see Yang and Blake looking at each other. And
this
I'm like,
we will complain about.
I'm watching this moment going, they're not going to kiss. Like, even when Yang cups Blake's face and, like, they blush at each other, I'm like, they're not going to kiss. And then they, like, bump heads. And I'm like, I still felt robbed. I was like, even though I knew they weren't going to kiss, I still feel cheated.
All the Bumblebee shippers, like, God damn it!
I don't even ship it and I'm mad!
It's like, they're not... It's the frustrating thing is, they're not hiding it. It's very clear where they stand, but they're not committing to it.
And
it's like,
again,
commit!
Here's the thing, though. They don't need to kiss in order to confirm they love each other, but it would just be nice to see.
It would. It'd just be a nice little moment.
And then my like annoyance is overtaken when Ren goes, "Hey, where's Nora?" And I'm like, "Oh no, now I'm sad."
It's how he says, like, "Where's Nora?" It's like he's probably thinking, like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna be like the big over the top, like dramatic." And it's like, "Oh Ren, we need to have a talk."
Oh, and then you get that great moment where Ruby's like, "Oh, Oscar, you're safe, and you brought Emerald." Hey, wait a minute.
And wait, you brought Emerald?
And the fact that Ruby, like, is legit ready to, like, I think, doesn't she, like, almost reach for a weapon?
She reaches for it. Like, she's, like, reaching for it, and Oscar's like, no, 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 she's with us.
It's like, I've already taken off Tyrion's tail. What limb can I take from you?
I started from the wrong end. The next time will be your head.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, Oscar's like, no, she's on our side. But then they didn't even get time to really sort of think about that. Because then they get a call from May, she's basically just going, shit, shit, shit.
Yeah, because at this point we find out what the phone call was. And it was, well, two things. One, they start shooting down all of the ships that were coming to help Mantle. And two, hiring a really good editor.
Oh, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, hiring a really good video editor. Because all of this then goes into the message that James is making. And I'm like, that would take days to make, not hours. Yeah, as someone who's done video editing, I call bullshit.
Is the cameraman going, you look great, sir. Yeah, I've... Like the lighting, like your
it's
performance.
It's the visual effects with, like, the light, like, disappears as he walks through it. And it's just surrounded in a void. It's like... How much video editing did that take? And where can I hire said person?
Okay, I definitely look like the good guy, right? Absolutely, sir, 100%. So, okay, first, here's the thing, though. First of all, when those ships were getting shot down, at first I thought those had people in them.
Yeah, but same. I was like, oh no.
I don't think they did. It turns out they were the empty ones that were being sent to pick people up from Mantle. But that's still so evil. Like, yeah. Ironwood saw a bunch of ships that would have brought people up from Mantle to Atlas. And he said, yeah, shoot those down. I'm like, what? And then he proceeds... I'm not going to, like, dissect the entire speech, but he basically says, I have a bomb. Penny, come back to Atlas and open the vault, or I will blow up Mantle. And it's like, yeah, no, you're a villain now. You are irredeemable, good sir. I hope Crow shoves his scythe right up your ass.
It's the fact that he says it all so goddamn calmly. Like, he is... like, because here's the thing. He doesn't just... he's not just shooting them down. And he doesn't even go like, oh, no, I'll help Mantle when this is all over. No, it's... get to the vault. We'll leave. And we'll leave Mantle to fend for itself. Like, even then, it's like, you're still condemning Mantle to death.
Yes, but I wouldn't have personally killed them myself. Therefore, I'm the good guy.
No! And I think that's what makes you evil.
And, like, his logic of, like, okay, Penny won't help me unless we help Mantle. So if I just got rid of Mantle, problem solved. And it's like, God, you're evil.
Evil and stupid. I think one of my favourite reactions is when it cuts to Watts and Cinder, and they're watching it on a big screen, and you don't see their expression because it's just a small turn, but I like to think that Watts is like, whoa, I pushed him off the deep end.
Well, Watts is like, wow, that's evil even for me.
Oh, James, what have I done?
I'm so proud of you. And here's the thing, though.
I mean,
though,
he kind of would say that.
And then, do you reckon when, like, that call ended, Iron was like, turned the video off, and he was like, man, I love being a good guy.
Yes, yes, exactly.
And the worst part is that wasn't even a message just for them. The whole of Atlas and Mantle hears this. Imagine being one of those poor Mantle citizens, hearing the guy who's kind of in charge of your nation come up on the TV and say, I will kill you to get what I want. Like, you know, I know politicians have a habit of doing that, but very rarely are they this honest.
This is the honesty people, no one was asking for this.
And, like, you get this one great bit where, like, it's the rest of the happy huntresses, Fiona, I think, is holding, like, the phone, and, like, she drops it and starts crying, and, like, the other two just console her. And it's like, ooh! And then and I was thinking, okay, after that message, Winter totally just stabbed Ironwood through the face after that message ended, right? Nope, she's still walking with him down the halls. And I was about to question this, but then we hear the ace. Oh, by the way, we're on the next episode, by the way.
Can I quickly butt in? Because at the beginning the beginning of this episode, there are still Grimm, by the way. Like, not all the Grimm were wiped out by that explosion. But we see the Gorilla Grimm.
Oh, yeah, we do.
We see the Gorilla Grimm that were built up ages ago. It's like, oh, there they are. There they go.
Yeah, there are my flying monkeys, and they're just a bit part. Was it the moment where, like, during the animation, they were like, shit, we forgot to add the flying gorillas. Put them in this scene. Put them in this scene. There, we didn't forget them.
I legitimately think, yeah, they forgot them.
It's such a minor thing, but, like, it still feels like a letdown.
Because that was, like, a bit... that was a post-credit scene. Like, what was it? Volume 4?
No, Volume 6.
Volume 6. Like, it was a bit... like, that was a build-up, like, oh, they're making flying monkeys. What's going to happen here?
And they're important because Salem's the Wicked Witch. What did the Wicked Witch have? Flying monkeys!
Except now they're flying gorillas. That's more terrifying. But they're not here.
Yeah, it's like I expected to see more of them, but it's like, did they run out of budget? I know considering Volume 8 was made in, like, a COVID climate, things were difficult, and I don't want to be like, oh, I can't believe they did so, like, you know, they were struggling, they had to make do with what they did, but I still feel let down over, like, such a minor development.
Yeah, it's like, we didn't even see them in Volume 7 either. It's like,
well, it was fine, because Salem hadn't shown up then.
True.
Yeah, but it was like with Volume 8, we were like, oh yeah, flying monkeys, here we go. And then it's like, oh, I'm not getting my flying monkeys.
I'm not getting my flying monkeys, aren't I? Damn you!
Yeah.
Anyway, you all to hell!
Back to the plot.
Back to the stuff that actually matters.
Yeah, so the Aesops are basically going, oh, he's bluffing though. He's not actually going to blow up. He's just...
it's Vine and Elm are kind of like, oh no, he's... what? Vine's, like, being his usual calm self. Oh, no, no, he's just bluffing. Elm's, like, I think in denial. Harriet is just like, I don't care. Like, which makes me go, like, butting in again. Like, Harriet, I don't think she's going to die, but I think she's going to be one of those of, like, she's going to just go off the deep end. She's going to end up imprisoned.
Yeah, like, I was...
There's no redeeming Harriet.
I remember theorizing back in my Volume 7 review, like, oh, I wonder if Harriet will, like, double down and become more evil. At this rate, she's tripling down.
Yeah. Like, I think, other than Marrow, I think the closest would be Elm. Because even Elm's, like, looking like... again, in denial that all
well,
this.
Well, what happens is, like, Ironwood comes out and he basically makes it clear, oh, I'm not bluffing. I will blow up Mantle to get what I want. And Harris and Vine are sort of like, well, all right then. Elm's like, okay. And Marrow, finally, this is finally the tipping point for him. And he's
the
like,
the straw that breaks the camel's back.
He just chews him out. He finally, like, thing is though, at the moment, like, he starts lashing out and is like, you know, I believed in you. This isn't saving people. And like, I'm like, okay, Marrow, on one hand, I'm really proud of you, but oh my God, you're going to die.
He's going to kill you. He's going to kill you like he killed that cancelman ages ago.
And the thing is, though, is that, like, the fact that, I think you were actually hitting the nail on the head. Like, looking at how, like, the other three react, Harriet doesn't give a shit. Vine is just, is like, well, if this gets the job done. And Elm, I guess, like, is just choosing just not to say anything. And I'm like, wow, you feel awful. You guys are complicit in bombing an entire city of the very people that you were hired to protect.
That is kind of the thing. Like, they're representing all known discourse. The one who's trying to sit on the fence. The one that's actively arguing and is perpetuating it and making it worse. The one who's like, oh, I don't want to get involved with Elm, and then Marrow's the only one trying to do something about it.
And the fact that is, you know, again, the fact that Marrow then turns his back on Ironwood, I'm like, you stupid man. And you hear Ironwood pull out the gun before Winter decks Marrow in the face, like, handcuffs him, and is like, don't worry, sir, I'll throw this traitor in the brig where he belongs. I'm like, sure you will, Winter. Yeah, sure you will. Oh, you totally didn't save Marrow's life then, and you two definitely aren't going to betray him.
I am gutted that this is the last we see of them two in this episode, because I was like, oh, they're saving that for the next. They're saving it for the next episode.
Like, it's like, friendship ended with Ironwood. Now Marrow is my new best friend.
Now Marrow is the one I will protect at all costs.
Oh my god, maybe that's where, once they kill Ironwood, General Schnee and her second in command, Marrow.
I mean, that would make sense. She is the second in command, isn't she?
Yeah, and then Marrow gets put in charge of the ASOPs, and he's like, okay, my first order, you three going to jail.
Yeah. Yeah, you three are going to jail. You're all complicit.
And then Crow gives him, like, Clover's pin.
Oh.
I think that'd be really sweet.
That'd be poetic as shit.
I think that'd be really nice. I know it doesn't really matter, but I wonder if, do you think Clover would have been complicit with bombing Mantle if he was still alive?
I'd like to think no, but also thinking back.
Yeah, when you look back up, I know we were like, Clover was a nice guy, he wouldn't go along with it, but then you remember Volume 7, you're like,
Like, yeah, it's that thing of, yeah, he's a nice guy, but he's still a cop.
That's the thing, though. Elm, Vine, and Harriet were perfectly nice people when we first met them, and now look at them now, and it's like, no, you all suck.
Allow me to go further. Remember that guy who was really nice to Cinder? How did that turn out? It's almost like, oh, yes, I'm a nice person, but I need to stick to the word of the law. Maybe that's not a good thing.
And then we cut back to the mansion where everyone's just going, God, we're screwed. Like,
especially Ruby. Like, Ruby is
that's great.
In her hands.
Okay, don't get me wrong. It hurts to see Ruby at such a low point. You know, Ruby, always full of such boundless optimism and hope, is like completely broken by this. She can't think of a way out. You know, she can't reason with Ironwood, clearly.
What happens when someone tries to reason with Ironwood in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and she knows this, and like, they can't come up with an alternative plan to like try and stop him, and like, it's finally broken her. And again, it sucks to watch, but the drama, like, Ruby needed this. Like, you know, Volume 6 was like the start, like, and that's one of the reasons why I liked that volume so much. And just to see her like, just being weathered down by everything that's going on. And to be fair, we should probably save this for like the later scene, because at first it's just everyone's just kind of like trying to come up with an idea, and Emerald's like, well, if Ruby's given up, clearly there's no hope. And then this Weiss just goes, shut up.
Yeah, it's Weiss, just, you don't see her, you just hear her go, shut up.
And I love that. I'm like, yeah, tell her. I mean, Emerald, I'm glad you're on the good guy's side now, but you deserve this.
We do not need the pedantry corner, thank you very much, Emerald.
And like, you know, Yang's just gonna go deck Emerald in the face, and Oscar has to be the mediator going, this is not solving anything. Like,
we need to think this through, and Ruby just snaps.
Actually, you know what? Looking back at this, I actually like, because Oscar starts going on about like, oh, all this like, you know, tension between us, like all this distrust, it isn't getting us anywhere. And I remember thinking, I feel like we've had this conversation before, and then Ruby goes, then nothing has changed. And it's like, they acknowledge it! Okay, that's good!
And it's like, they saw it coming, Michael. They saw that coming.
And I kind of like that. It has sometimes felt over like the past couple of volumes that it almost feels like a lot of conversations of like sort of going around in circles a little bit. And then at this point, it finally comes to a head. Ruby's like, we have made zero progress. Like, nothing's worked. And like, that's a later scene, because first we get the Ren Nora scene. Ren Nora scene, my heart. Oh.
I have a heart because it's breaking.
No, it wasn't. No, this isn't a heartbreaking scene. It's a heartwarming scene.
There's a little one there.
Well, I mean, it starts off like painful because like Jean's like trying to heal Nora's scars, and he's like, "Oh, sorry, no matter what I do, like I can't get rid of them." I'm like, "Good, the scars are cool. Leave them."
I was gonna say, like, they look so cool. They fit Nora's character.
I'm glad he couldn't heal them. But and then Ren's and Nora's like, oh, just another ditzy move from Nora. And Ren's like, no, he's like, that's not true. And Nora just lashes out. And to be fair, she needed this.
Oh, yeah.
Nora
she finally, needed to clear it.
Finally calls Ren out on how, like, you know, you can't deal with emotions, so you just choose not to feel anything. And Ren goes, you're right. And I apologize. I've been a terrible friend and a terrible teammate. And it's like, oh, I don't want to do a play-by-play of this entire scene because
I do like
forever.
It that it's like that Ren's, because we were worried like, oh, is he going to go down the dark path or is he going to redeem himself? And I'm glad that it's like it's gone the path of like, no, he's acknowledging what he did, like everything wrong he did. It's good.
Yeah. In fact, don't forget, this was something I was really anxious about, like, back in episode 3, when Nora was having, like, a little, like, I don't know who I am anymore without Ren. And I'm like, oh, where's this going to go? And, you know, I was thinking, oh, like, Ren's going to finally realize to, like, be more, he's finally going to be able to give Nora what she wants. But then she's going to not take it because of, like, her, and they're kind of sort of going to break up. But they don't. They instead, like, Jean, like, sort of realises, I'm gonna go.
It's the fact where he goes, I failed as a teammate and as a partner. And, like, Jean looks between him and he's like, I gotta go. It does the very anime tropey thing of, like, several frames of animation going, I'm just gonna leave the room.
Yeah. And, again, they just have probably the first honest conversation they've had in years. Where yep. Ren admits that, like, because he's been holding off in his emotions, that, like, he's been letting the team down. And, you know, Nora sort of points out that, you know, she is just the funny girl who hits stuff really hard. And Ren's like, that's not true. And, like, he points out all these great qualities about her. And you get that moment where, like, what's the line? He's, like, sort of basically, like, it's why I love you. And he's like, I mean, it's the things I love. And he just goes, it's why I love you. And I'm like, oh my god, he said, like, I never thought he would be the one to say it first.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point.
But the really sucky thing about it is the fact that, you know, these are words that Nora has probably wanted to hear for so long, but now she sort of realized that because she's become so dependent. And actually, before I forget, we get a little glimmer of Nora backstory where she mentions that her mum left her, which is like, okay, wow. Can we hunt her down?
Yeah. I just want to talk.
You know what?
I just want to talk.
What? Actually, I take that back. Don't hunt her down. No, Nora's ours. Like, you had your chance. You don't deserve a beatdown.
She's doing much better without you.
Exactly. And then, like, Nora, you know, she basically, because she's been so dependent on Ren for so many years, you know, they've always been Ren and Nora. Like, she doesn't know who Nora is by herself. And she needs that. And she needs to do it alone. And Ren accepts that and is like clearly ready to like be patient with her and like wait for her until like they're both ready. I'm sorry. Oh my, I need to leave.
I think the thing that got me was when he does the boop to her.
Oh my god, I forgot about the boop.
It's just the boop. It's like, oh, it's the fact that Ren does it. It's like my heart.
Okay, James, do we want to take like a quick break to just go cry in the bathroom?
Just playing the necessary music.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
It's just so sweet.
Oh.
And I love the fact
because going back, I remember one of the songs. I think it was from Volume One called "Boop," and it is meant to be yes.
Boop
means that, when Nora says "Boop," it's basically meaning that she loves him. So it's like it's come full circle. We've gone back.
quick correction: that was a Volume Two song, actually.
Volume Two still doesn't matter. Still going back.
I think that's my favorite song on Volume Two soundtrack, and I can't remember if I mentioned this on the show before, but that song is why I started shipping Ren and Nora in the first place, because it was obviously from Nora's perspective, and like the whole, I can't remember the exact lyric, but yeah, it's like when she doesn't know how to say she loves you, so she says "boop" instead. And it's
I know what I'm playing at the end of the episode today.
Oh, thank you. Oh, do you reckon they'll get? Do you reckon we'll get another Ren Nora love song on the soundtrack?
Oh, that'd be so good.
Oh, I hope so. But yeah, so that whole scene's fantastic. It would have been very easy for the writers to instead just sort of up the angst, have Ren sort of come back ready to be with Nora, but she pushes him back, and the two end up sort of being back at square one. But no, instead we have a very mature, lovely conversation between the two where they just hash it out. They reaffirm that they love each other, but Nora needs time to discover who she is on her own. And I'm just repeating myself now. It's lovely. I love it.
One of the best scenes of the episode, if not the best.
And then we cut to and then it's like a Crow and Robin bit where they're getting their stuff back, and Crow's like, "I'm so gonna murder Ironwood," and
Robin's like, "No."
Robin's
you're doing this for yourself, essentially. We need to stop him from destroying Mantle.
Yeah, Crow. I mean, Crow killing Ironwood would be beneficial for a lot of people, but ultimately he's doing it he's doing it for his own reasons,
bringing up Clover again, I did like what she actually said, between you and Clover, I think you were the better huntsman. Not because you're the one who actually walked away, but because you actually fight for what you believed in. And it's like...
That is true.
And it goes back... we didn't bring this up earlier. It brings up a line that Mara brought up earlier when he's, confronting Ironwood and the Aesops. When he goes, "Do you free believe in anything?" And it's like, yes! Because they're ultimately fighting for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that was always a problem, all the way back in Volume 7. They only sided with Ironwood because they were ordered to. And that was, Clover's problem, the fact that he you have to sort of actually wonder, when Clover fought Crow, was he doing what he believed was right, or was he just following orders? And I think it was, sort of ambiguous enough, but I there's a very strong case to say that ultimately, he left his beliefs at the door.
Which sucked.
And I also feel like the way Robin's sort of trying to slow Crow down is, I get the sense that he's back on his self-destructive tendencies again.
Yeah.
So, he's so determined to get revenge on Ironwood that he's willing, it's the kind of instance where he would throw himself into a hallway with bullets being flung at him. It wouldn't matter. He's I just want to kill Ironwood. I don't care if I die. I just want to kill him. And then she's trying to save him as well.
Yeah. And then they see that the elevator's opening up. They get their weapons ready, but then they look shocked. Oh, gee, I wonder who it could be.
To be fair, I do actually kind of wish, they obviously don't show it. It's obviously Winter and Marrow, but I wish we got to see it, just to see Winter and Marrow just looking, super confused. There's this sort of this awkward moment where the four of them are friends?
Friends!
And it's sort of we're on the same side, right? That depends. Do you want to stop Ironwood? We want to stop Ironwood!
I would actually I look forward to seeing this, because the last major time... I was about to bring up when Crow and Winter fought each other. And it's wait, they've met a couple times since then. Never mind. Ignore
me. They have,
me.
But we've never seen them fight together.
Yeah. I actually would what Winter's like... If Winter and Crow working together to stop Ironwood is actually good. Because... Winter has always been so loyal to Ironwood, and now Crow's having to hash out a few feelings. It'd be nice to actually let them bouncing off each other and working together.
That would, and I know the Crow and Winter shippers are going to love it.
That's not what I want.
I'm not saying they're going to hook up, but I'm just going to say it's Crow and Winter fighting together is material for the Crow and Winter shippers.
Yeah.
So. By the way, actually, I feel so sorry for all the people whose favourite character is Ironwood. So I'm ooh,
oh.
Sorry, guys.
I mean, if you don't mind him being a massive villain at this point, then yeah, you might still be a little bit happy. But if you were wanting him to be a hero all the way through, oh no.
Check's in the mail. It's a sympathy check.
$10 for your therapy.
$10 for I'm sorry. And then we get, like, we cut back to Ruby having like a little quiet cry on the stairs, and Yang coming to, like, being her, being the big sister and coming to comfort her.
What
and
I like actually... to call the heartbreak moment of the episode.
Well, this was like what kind of. What, like, shocked me was the fact that Yang starts asking about the hound and is like, man, good job kicking its ass. Like, it kicked our ass. And
you always have, like, to one-up me.
And then Ruby's like, did Blake tell you what was in it? And Yang's like, yeah. And Ruby's like, you know what that means? And Yang's like, no, it doesn't. And Ruby's like, that's what happened to Mum. And I'm like, okay, I know we came to that conclusion, but how did you come to that conclusion? And then I double-checked, and I'm...
So did I!
I'm so mad that we missed this.
We both missed it.
We completely overlooked the fact that the Faunus guy that was inside the hound had silver eyes.
Just like Ruby, just like Maria.
So that's why Salem wants her alive. So she can turn her into a Grimm. And she's probably done that to Summer. And Ruby's already made that connection. And this is... the Yang just breaks.
Yeah.
It's like... Oh,
because that's not what you want to hear.
And here's the thing, though. It's like, okay, they, like, our mum's probably a Grimm. And now here's the thing. Is she even still alive, or has she already been killed?
Okay. In terms of story, I'd be like, oh, no, I hope that Grimm died so Summer's not around anymore. But for drama, I want her to still be around and they have to confront her.
And then they save her.
I mean, if they find a way.
And then we get this other fantastic bit of Ruby sort of going, God, my plan was a complete disaster. I shouldn't have been so childish. I shouldn't have bothered. And Yang going, no, my plan was the bad one. Like, you were actually right. And it's like, okay, this is why they had the little tiff at the first episode. So we could have this bit where they go, no, you were right. And Yang pointing out that being optimistic and having hope is not a bad thing. And it's something that people need. Hmm. And... Oh, I love seeing Ruby so dejected and so tired. It's great. I know, again, it's sad, but it's like, it's nice to see.
It also ties into something I'll say a little later in the scene after this, but it's just such a heartbreaking bit, but it's also just nice to have Yang be the one, like, going, no, like, what, yeah, took a risk and it didn't work out, probably didn't work out for her. She's still my hero, and it's like...
It's the moment she hugs Ruby and you see Ruby just, like, tense up and start trying really hard not to cry. And it's like, aww. And then Penny breaks out and is like, oh, yeah, we need to deal with this.
It's the fact that we hear a smash and just Jean just runs past him and just goes, help, help.
And so I almost feel like, oh, yeah, this is happening. And, like...
Penny is still very much...
really interrupts the emotions of the previous scene. But anyway... Penny's like trying to fly off, but she's still trying to fight the virus. Like, everyone's holding her down. Even Emeralds joins in with her hook guns.
I did like that bit, but she literally, like, starts pulling her down. She's like, do something!
Also, wow, I was wrong. I was like, oh, maybe because of the way the virus works, it can't access her maiden powers, and then she uses her maiden powers. I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's so old. This is way worse than I thought it was.
This could have gone a whole lot worse.
But then you get that moment where, like, Penny's like, just kill me. Like, Ruby, kill me, and then I can transfer the power to you. And I'm like, they're not going
to
kill you, Penny.
Allow me to put this once. In my little bitch later folder.
Oh, really? What, do you not like that bit?
Not this bit, the bit after.
Okay. But then you get this great bit where they sort of realise, oh, hang on a second, Penny has an aura. Like, Jean, amplify her aura, and that manages to not completely get rid of the... At first I thought, did he just get rid of the virus? But then later on they say, oh, no, it's still there, but she has, like, better control of it. Mm. And Jean even says, I can't keep, like, buffing her aura forever. Like, so I was like, okay, good. And
It's the basic Nora, like, it's a part of you, just like I told you. And it's like, ah, we're able to actually work with this again and actually make it work this time.
And, okay, all you guys that were bitching about, oh, Penny getting infected by the virus completely undermines that she's actually a human being. No, it didn't, because this is what they were building up to.
And then Ruby hugs Penny, and it kind of just ends there. And here's, now bringing back my bitch folder. Remember back in the last volume where you were like, you kind of wanted a bit more out of Penny and Ruby?
Is that it?
It's like you wanted to see a bit more, like, because she just thought she lost her. I kind of wanted a bit more where I was like, literally, Penny said, kill me. And that look on Ruby's face, I feel like she kind of just forgets about it very quick. And I feel like that should have been like a, just like, don't you ever say that again.
Oh, I see what you mean. I think it was mostly there just for immediate drama. Because, like, you could have easily have just removed that and jumped straight to the, like, oh, like wait, what if we tried boosting her aura? Like, I think it was there more so to get the fans going, oh no, because like, know, she wasn't gonna kill her.
I know that, but it just would have been nice just to have that little bit of just like still hug her in a bit, just like, don't you ever say that again, just especially after the last scene where it's like just talking about how her mum's might be a Grimm.
I think I know what you mean. Would you have preferred it if, like, maybe, like, they had, like, more of an exchange where Ruby would say to her, I lost you once, I am not losing you again, like,
pretty much that, yes.
And then we get this bit where Emerald's like, oh, you know what, you guys are actually doing pretty okay. I mean, yeah, you're getting your asses kicked, and that's partly my fault. And then she says, I'm just going to be super pissed if you guys give up just when I switch sides. And it's like, hey, Emerald's now she's officially switched sides. And while I'm glad about this, I feel like this could have been handled way better, because it's like, okay, here's my, I don't know, again, I will reiterate what I said in in the last recap we did. Emerald switching sides isn't the problem I have. It's the fact that she's done this completely independent of Cinder. Like, Emerald, it's been obvious from, like, the moment they first appeared in the scene together that Emerald is very dependent on Cinder. Like, she would do anything for her. So the fact that she ends up leaving without having any sort of interaction with Cinder, or, like, any, not giving any indication that she wants to immediately try and track down Cinder, because here's the thing, though. Emerald knows Cinder hates Ruby. She knows Cinder wants to murder Ruby. And now she's, like, joined their team. She must know Cinder's not going to be okay with that. But I feel like Emerald's sort of, like, they need to address this, I really do feel. Like, Emerald and Cinder have been so intrinsically linked for so long. You can't just have Emerald join the hero side and go, well, I know Cinder will be mad, but this is my choice. It's like, no, that's too easy. I feel like you need to have a moment of Emerald's trying to once again reach out to Cinder, say, listen, like, this isn't good for you, but Salem is the enemy here, we should like forget it. And she could even say, we don't even have to join Ruby's team, let's just run away together, like, we don't even need to worry about that. And have Cinder go, no, I want power, if you're not working with me, you're my enemy, and I will kill you if I see you again, something like that. And I don't know, we've still got, like, I think one episode or two left.
I think
left.
We've got three more episodes.
Really? Three?
Yeah, because I think this is a 14-episode volume.
Okay, so yeah, still got plenty of time to get something there. But and the thing is, though, they could end up doing it in this in, like, volume 9 or something. But I'm going to be really let down if we go for the rest of this volume without Emerald having one last conversation with Cinder. Like, it needs to happen.
Well, bringing that up very quickly, not only is this going to be 14 episodes of volume, apparently also volume 8 and volume 9 are going to go, like, straight into each other.
Oh, so it's going to be like how volume 7 ran straight into 8.
Yes. So okay. It could be some bits will go into volume 9.
I mean, okay, I'd be okay with that, but I still almost feel like that kind of thing should really happen in the volume where Emerald defects.
A little bit, yeah.
But again, I do really like the idea of Emerald joining the good guys team. I know we've complained before, there's too many characters, but I would actually like to see a volume of Emerald hanging out with the good guys, because I'm going to be honest with you, James, I'm getting major Catra from She-Ra vibes.
Oh, like, God, I just thought, what if this, like, it goes like you said, like, she, like, goes, like, let's just run away together, let's just, like, get out of this, and Sin just, like, no, but doesn't, like, just so, if I see you again, okay, she, like, does an explosion, like, tries to blow her up and leaves, and then you just see, like, a little bit of dust.
Oh, what, like, actually does try to kill Emerald?
Does try to kill Emerald, but it turns out it was just, like, Emerald using her powers. Like,
that would be so good!
Like, she's, like, even inwardly she knows, she'll kill me she's gonna kill me, but I need to try. And it's like, nope, she's too far gone, Emerald.
Dude, I'm actually imagining the scene in my head, and it's perfect. And if the writers don't do this, I'm sorry. That's, like, insane. I will write it myself if they don't do it.
Guess I gotta do it myself.
I will. And like, going back,
picking up a pen instead of the Infinity Gauntlets.
Exactly, the Infinity Pen. But yeah, Emerald says she switched that, and I love Yang's like, aww. It's like, well, you guys forgave her real quick. I mean, I'm being facetious there, but like,
it's a nice moment. It's even nicer moment when it's like, Oscar's like, Ozpin wants to say a few words.
It would have been so funny. Like, okay, it's Ozpin now, and Yang just decks him. It's like, sorry. Like,
reflex.
No, it's okay. I deserve that.
What he kind of just like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm sorry for not
finally,
telling you.
Finally, completely honest with them, like, genuinely apologetic, and they're sort of like, yeah, okay, we need to move past this if we're going to beat Salem, so yeah, we forgive you. And it's like, ah, good. I'm glad this wrapped up.
And he also like looks at Emerald like really fondly. It's like, ah, everyone's working together really nicely.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing an Oscar Emerald friendship. I think that'd be nice.
That'd be good. Like, yeah, just like they've kind of like knocked together, but like the friendship has blossomed because of like everything that's happened in the whale.
Imagine if Emerald like became like the new fourth member of Sean's team. I know we all sort of assumed Oscar was that, but imagine if like Emerald sort of takes Pyrrha's place.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. But then of course they're all like, well, Penny's still got the virus and Iron was still going to blow up Mantle, so we're still kind of screwed. But then it's like, basically the implication is that Ruby decides, what if we actually let Penny go to the vault? And it's like, that's a risk we haven't considered. Do you get it, audience? That's the name of the episode.
It's like, I wonder where they could go with this.
Oh, and then the very last bit of the episode is Watson Cinder meeting up with Nick, and I think actually Watts hacks into like Ironwood's communications, because yeah, that's right, Ruby phones Ironwood up and says, yeah, Penny will come, she'll come alone. Watts is overhearing this with his hacking skills, and then Neo shows up and it's like, oh, where's it gonna go, what's gonna happen, I can't wait.
Oh, these last few episodes are gonna be glorious.
You know what, I remember like not particularly, I remember having a lot more problems with that second episode, but on like a talking about it with you, I actually think I like it a bit more now. It was getting a bit speechy at points, which I think has always been a problem Ruby's kind of had, where it sometimes feels like characters aren't having proper exchanges of dialogue. They're kind of just speeching at one another.
They're talking at each other, not to each other.
Exactly. But these two episodes were still very enjoyable. I think after like some initial lulls back at the start of Volume 8, it's really picked up as it's gone on.
Easily so. Like,
hopefully it carries that momentum throughout these last few episodes. I'm actually really glad you confirmed there's like three more, because I thought there was like only one. So I was thinking, how are they going to wrap all this up in one episode? And they won't. They've got three more. So it's like, yes.
It's like, oh, what's going to happen now? And again, I will say that ultimately the first one we recapped, Ultimatum, was overall my favourite, but I did like Risk too. Like, I mean, yeah. Risk had a lot of like moments where just like my heart, my shattered heart is all over the floor. Damn it, Michael, get me a dustpan and brush.
I think it was because it was like a combination of everything we've been waiting for. You know, Marrow finally defecting and giving like calling Ironwood a piece of shit. Ren and Nora like hashing it out. Like, Emerald's asserting that she's on the good guy's side now, which, again, like I said, I had problems with, but I'm still glad it's happened. I do think if Emerald's going to stick with the team, I think somebody needs to stay behind. I vote Crow.
It's like, oh no, guys, we're all going to go, and Marrow's going to join us. God.
Look, I love Marrow, but like, legit, no, Marrow, don't join the team. This is getting too crowded.
There's too many people in this show.
At this point, all I want is like when I compared Emeralds to Catra earlier, I just want a moment where like, well, the characters go, do you remember that bit when Catra joined the good guys in She-Ra and like she sneezed and Bo's like, I can't believe like you've had an adorable sneeze all this time, you've been trying to kill us. I want something like that.
Oh god, that just makes me want to rewatch the last season of She-Ra now, because that was a good
yeah, me too actually.
And I think I put it squarely on, well, actually, no, put it squarely on two people, Catra's redemption and also not evil Hordak.
By the way, spoilers, Catra gets a redemption arc. Because it was very touch and go there.
Yeah, it was very touch and go.
I do actually wonder if, like, Cinder's slowly becoming, like, Catra if she didn't switch sides.
Ooh, that's
like,
good.
I feel like Cinder and Catra are very similar in a lot of ways.
Early season Catra especially, yes.
Yeah, definitely. Or I'd say like even like season 3 Catra.
Hmm. just the final breaking apart of her. And sadly, it's all we've got to do because we've got to wrap up now because we're coming up to the last few minutes. So,
well, thank God, yeah, we managed to wrap it up. I was worried we were going to not going to have to rush through it, but we did it.
Yeah, we did it. So we wrapped up two really damn good episodes, and then next week we're going to be talking about Attack on Titan. Oh, speaking of also Attack on Titan, the last manga chapter is coming out in April. We are coming to the end.
Well, James is coming to the end. I'm not going to know how it ends for another few months.
Yes, maybe even more if they do stick with the we're going to be cutting this in half.
Don't be surprised if it gets to April and like James just goes, guys, we're stopping the Attack on Titan recaps.
I made a mistake.
I'll be like, oh, it's that bad. It's like, oh, it's very bad.
I feel like at this point we've kind of gone too deep.
And on that bombshell,
we will see you next time. So this is James Hall saying goodbye.
This is Michael Beckwith saying goodbye.
We will see you next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye.